So I called my internet provider last week to try to get a better plan without getting completely robbed in the process, which I know this is already a bad idea. But I'd been overpaying for years, and I figured, look, let me just call and sort this out like a reasonable adult. And yes, I braced myself for the very potential shit show that might unfold. And so, 2 hours later, I'd spoken to four different people, at least I think they were people, and I'd been transferred at least three times, and I'd been quoted three different prices for what I'm pretty sure was just the same plan in the end. And somehow I ended up in a conversation with someone who couldn't tell me what my current plan was and what I was currently paying or why. And so at one point, I was on hold long enough to walk to the store where I was briefly hypnotized by the great wall of mustard, which then led me to contemplating the whole toxic food supply in the US, which then led me to thinking about the whole slow motion collapsing system that produces said food supply. So I bought some things because I wanted to go home and make a sandwich. So I get home and I eat half the sandwich because the other half fell on the floor. And so I cleaned up the mess. And as I was cleaning up the mess, it was at that stage where I started to contemplate my life choices, because throughout this whole process, I'm still on hold listening to the horrific elevator music. And the conclusion that I arrived at as I was cleaning up the other half of the sandwich is that nobody in that entire organization had any idea what the hell was happening, and they didn't care either. And the thing is this isn't, of course, just the internet provider. I mean, this is everywhere now, right? This is every institution, every system, workplace, every government organization, and every customer service department that's ever put you on hold for 20 minutes and then transfer you to someone who then transfers you back. And there's this sort of, I guess, modern day absurdism that comes from dealing with what seems to be a life where you are running on less and less competence. And I think most people feel this now on some level. And most people just assume that it's them, right? It's their fault. Or it's maybe it's just bad luck, or maybe it's just that that particular company is having a bad day or something. Well, it's probably not those things, because there is actual data behind this feeling, and the data tells a story that I think is more interesting than and more disturbing than just companies not caring anymore, which they don't. But that's not exactly the whole story. I think the bigger story is about something that is happening to human cognitive capability on a massive scale. I mean, this is something that's actually measurable, and it's been documented across multiple countries and generations. And it's something that did not happen by accident. Now, just to be clear, I'm not saying that every single human being on this planet is getting dumber, because, you know, this is the kind of topic that can go sideways pretty fast if I'm not being careful. And I'd rather that didn't happen. So what I am saying is that we have undoubtedly, systematically stripped the kind of friction out of human life that's actually necessary to build actual capability, actual competence. And now we're living with the consequences of that. All right, so for most of the 20th century, every generation came out reasonably smarter than the one before, which meant the IQ scores were going up every decade, right? So there was a researcher by the name of James Flynn who documented this in the 1980s, where he discovered that IQ went up about 3 points every decade. So this has been going on for about a century. And the working theory to this was that better living conditions were basically producing better brains, which makes sense, right? And for a pretty long time, that appeared to be exactly what was happening. But then, somewhere around the, I guess, mid-1990s, depending on the country, it stopped. And it actually started going backward. So one of the first countries to report this was Norway, and then Denmark, Finland, France. And there was a study from 2023 out of Northwestern that found that between 2006 and 2018, average scores in the U.S. dropped in 3 out of 4 cognitive domains, which was something that I didn't particularly enjoy reading, but certainly was not surprised to hear. And now researchers in the Nordic countries are projecting a drop of around 7 IQ points in the next 30 years. Now, I realize that 7 points probably doesn't sound like that much until you think about what that means when you spread it across an entire population. Because then it actually sounds like quite a lot. And it is. Then there's the reading data, which I find even more unsettling than the IQ stuff. So there is an international study called PIRLS that tracks reading scores in fourth graders across a whole bunch of countries. And the 2021 results revealed declining scores in most of the countries that they looked at. And what they found was that kids who spent most of their time on digital devices scored lower on reading comprehension, and not by a little. They were scoring this way consistently. And the researchers, you know, they controlled for income and school quality and for pretty much everything that they could think of. So the devices kept showing up as the variable, which is the kind of finding that tends to get buried because, you know, nobody really wants to deal with what that implies, right? Okay. Now, this is the point where people might get a little defensive, and I get it, because nobody wants to hear that we are declining as a species. I mean, it's not exactly the kind of thing that's fun to contemplate over your Cheerios. But here's the thing. The researchers are pretty consistent on one important point. None of this is genetic. Nobody is being born less capable. And as far as the whole reversal IQ thing that's happening, it's being driven by environmental factors, which actually that's the more hopeful interpretation, because it means that we did this to ourselves. And if we did this to ourselves, well, then theoretically we could undo it. Theoretically. Now, whether we will, well, I guess that's a whole different question. Though, personally, I am not holding my breath on that. I think an analogy that gets closest to what actually is happening here is the muscle analogy. So cognitive capability works pretty much the same way that physical strength does. It doesn't disappear because someone was born weak. It disappears because the weight got removed. And over the last 20 or 30 years, we've been systematically removing the weight with some, well, pretty significant technological ingenuity, obviously. So then the question is, how did this happen? Because obviously it didn't happen all at once. This was more like a slow collaborative effort by several different forces that all arrived at around the same time. And these forces, they all pointed in pretty much the same direction. So in a sense, this was like a perfect storm of well-intentioned decisions that somehow collectively produced a population that is now less capable of doing hard things. And, you know, when you step back and you look at all of this, it's kind of an astonishing thing to have pulled off, because we actually engineered our way into becoming worse. Which, way to go, us, I guess. I mean, most species just go extinct, right? Not us. We found a way to do it to ourselves proactively. Yeah. So, at some point, schools started to standardize tests. And I know that may sound reasonable until you realize that what it actually produces is kids who learned how to pass a test without necessarily learning whatever the test was supposed to be measuring. And you know, those are very different things. I mean, knowing how to perform, understanding, and actually having it, one of those things gets you through the exam, and the other one is what you would use to get through the rest of your life. And guess which one the system prioritized? And then the smartphones come along, and those start to absorb all kinds of small cognitive jobs that your brain used to do. You know, this is just basic stuff like figuring out a route on your own, or, you know, memorizing phone numbers or any other number for that matter. I mean, there's a million examples of this. But one of my personal favorites is watching someone stand in front of a microwave and not be able to calculate how long 2.5 minutes is in seconds. Yeah, that used to be automatic, and now it's the kind of thing that requires a smartphone. And, you know, the thing is that none of these feels significant individually, but that is where the reps are. I mean, that is where the capability gets built. So, you know, if you take the shortcut before the skill is earned, well, then the brain draws the obvious conclusion, which is, I needed help with that. So apparently I can't do it. And then when you do that 10,000 times over a decade, the intelligence didn't go anywhere. It's just that you stopped exercising it like a muscle. And that produces the same result eventually, which is a lot more embarrassing because it was optional. So then, of course, AI arrives, and it offers to do almost all of the thinking. So there was this study which had 666 participants. And that's not a joke, by the way. That was actually the number of the people in the study. I choose to believe that the researchers knew, and they just kept that number on purpose as a warning. And so what that study found is that the frequent use of AI was a highly correlated with reduced critical thinking, because the mechanism was basically just cognitive offloading, where you're just handing the thinking to something else. And you're doing this so consistently that you eventually just stop doing your own thinking. And that's pretty much where we are at these days, and getting worse. There was another study done by Microsoft and Carnegie Mellon that had pretty similar results. So the more people who trusted AI to handle a task, the less critical thinking they applied to it. Which makes sense, because, I mean, why would you strain yourself if the machine can do it, right? I mean, the machine's right there. It doesn't get tired. It doesn't need a sandwich break or anything. Although at the rate things are going, it probably will eventually, and we will be legally required to provide one. And look, you know, the machine, it is impressive. I'm not arguing about that. It's just that the struggle it's replacing was doing something that the machine can't do for you. So there's this quote that usually gets attributed to Charles Bukowski, but I think it might have actually come from Bertrand Russell. And honestly, it somehow feels appropriate that nobody's really sure which of these curmudgeonly disillusioned geniuses said it first. But anyway, the quote is, "The problem with the world is that the intelligent people are full of doubts while the stupid ones are full of confidence." And I've been thinking about that quote recently because I think it describes something that was already built into how our organizations function before the cognitive decline stuff started happening. And it has a name. It's the Peter Principle. So Lawrence Peter figured out back in 1969 that in any organization, people tend to get promoted based on how well they perform in their current role, which of course sounds reasonable, right? But the problem is that the skills that make you good at one job are usually completely unrelated to the skills required for the next one up. And so what happens is you keep getting promoted until you eventually end up in a position where you can't really perform the job anymore. I mean, and not, at least not with any reasonable competence. And yet, there you remain. So Peter's conclusion was that given enough time, every position tends to be occupied by someone incompetent to handle it. And, you know, if you spend enough time in the workplace, which most of us have, this observation, it's pretty hard to miss. Now, Bukowski or Russell, that quote, it actually describes the Dunning-Kruger effect before it had an official name. So people with the least competence tend to have the most confidence. They don't really know enough to know what they don't know. And meanwhile, the people who are actually capable, they're the ones who are uncertain because they understand enough of the situation to actually see the complexity. I mean, they are capable enough to see the bigger picture. So the confident, incompetent person rises, and the capable, uncertain person second guesses themselves out of the room. Which ends up with organizations that select for exactly the wrong thing. And when you combine that feedback loop with the population that is increasingly undertrained in the basic stuff, the math gets pretty grim pretty fast. So, all right, there are a couple more things I think worth mentioning before I get to the point I'm trying to say something, I guess, useful. And one of these things is about credentials. So at some point, we started to confuse the credential with the thing that the credential was supposed to represent. For instance, take the college degree. You know, a college degree used to be evidence of your ability to sustain effort and ideally develop some kind of capability, right? And now it's really just becoming a thing that you obtain, almost like a participation trophy, except the participation trophy didn't leave you $65,000 in debt. And because hiring systems screen for these credentials rather than your actual ability, the incompetent but credentialed person, most of the time, is going to beat the competent but less credentialed person, which basically compounds the Peter principle. So you can be incompetent at multiple levels simultaneously. So the other thing I wanted to mention briefly is parenting. And I say this with some sensitivity because, you know, it's the kind of observation that tends to make people a little defensive. So a lot of parents, when they're trying to give their kids a better experience than they had, they end up accidentally removing the thing that made their own experience useful, which is the difficulty, you know, the friction. Those are those moments where you have to figure something out yourself because nobody's going to fix it for you. And so what ends up happening is that produces over time kids who never really had to struggle with anything hard. And it doesn't mean that they're not intelligent. It just means that they've never had to use their intelligence in a way that actually builds anything. And because everyone around them is living through pretty much the same conditions, nobody really notices, it just becomes normalized. I mean, it feels like it's just how things are. It's just a typical day where nobody can calculate how long 2.5 minutes, you know, 2.5 minutes is in seconds. But everybody has a very high self-esteem about it. So, having said all of that, the good news is that this is potentially fixable. The bad news is the fixing is going to require doing very difficult things that the entire architecture of our modern lives has been designed to make you not want to do. So, you know, good luck to all of us, I guess. Okay, the boring part. So basically, our brains respond to challenge the way muscle responds to weight, like I mentioned earlier, which means that the only real antidote to all of this cognitive atrophy is its cognitive effort. So you got to do hard things on purpose, even when there's easier versions available. And I know that sounds unattractive, but I think it's really going to involve changing habits and doing things like sitting with a problem long enough to actually think it through instead of, you know, immediately outsourcing it to a machine, which might not even get it right. And it is going to involve actually reading something that requires your full attention instead of something that was designed to, you know, just capture a fraction of it. None of that is going to appear in a motivational poster because it sounds too much like homework, which it, well, basically that's what it is. But the part that makes all of this even more difficult and complicated is that we're trying to solve an individual problem that is, it's primarily a structural one. Because the truth is that technology made us passive at exactly the moment that actual survival got harder. I mean, wealth inequality keeps accelerating, right? Real opportunity keeps shrinking. And I think when people feel like effort doesn't lead anywhere worth going, and when the evidence of their own lives just keeps delivering that message, learned helplessness is just that's just a person updating their model based on what keeps happening to them. And unfortunately, you know, you can't motivational speech your way out of that. You can put all the sticky notes you want on a structural problem, and it's still going to remain fully intact. It's just going to be covered in sticky notes. So the individual stuff matters. And it matters, but it's also not enough. And both of those things are true. And I don't have a clean way to resolve that. What I do have is the observation that, you know, when you have a civilization that stops valuing actual education, not credentials, I mean actual understanding and a desire to learn, that civilization probably isn't going to fix this by accident. I think it's going to require something a lot more uncomfortable than an app. I mean, at least one of us should know what 2.5 minutes is in seconds. I guess that's somewhere to start. Yeah, plenty to think about there. So, but this is where I am going to stop. So, thank you so much for listening.